welcome back to another great week of the Geek Whispers. I'm Amy Lewis.
I'm Matt Brender.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And we have a fantastic friend of the podcast on with us this evening, Rob Peglar. Tell us about yourself. Come on down. I feel like it's The Price is Right.
There you go. Come on down. Well, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. It's really fun. I've listened to many an episode and admire your work, sometimes from afar, of course. I travel a lot. A little bit about me. Where do I start? I usually try to avoid citing my age, but I will tell you that this is my 26th year in the business, and that figure is hexadecimal. So you geeks figure it out, and then you will know.
So much street cred right now.
I don't think he just made a geek gang sign, right? It's
like, I'm counting on my fingers. I don't know if I have that many. Anyway.
That's right. You need 16 on each end, but anyway. I'm the vice president of advanced storage at Micron Technologies currently. Been in the job all of 2 months. It's a fantastic job. I love it. It's with a great company doing some really cool things that make my propeller spin on the top of my head, in addition to getting to leading some great people. 4 years at EMC before that at Isilon Division, CTO of the Americas, a wonderful gig, had a great run there. 11 years at Xiotech as a senior fellow and VP of technology. Wonderful stuff. Early days of disk virtualization. 10 years at Storage Tech before that, getting ensconced in the world of tape and this funky thing called Fibre Channel, which was back in the early 90s. And then 10 years at Control Data before that in the supercomputer business. So writing code for probably 20 years or so at the first two companies. So a developer by trade. Haven't written code for money in a while, but that's something we'll talk about. You know, the leadership and managing engineers, directing projects, things like that. Well, I do a lot of that. So go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just want to jump right in because that's such a great gateway into the conversation to talk about leadership. Because clearly, as Matt was joking, lots of geek street cred there. When you are a geek's geek, and again, we've had many wonderful conversations, you've got absolutely the hardcore engineering chops. What leads you down the leadership path? Was it inevitable? Did you know you were going that way? Was it a slow build? How did you land here?
I'll tell you what, that's a great question. I'll take choice number three. It was a slow build. it started at the, I would say, the eighth, ninth year of my career. You know, again, writing code for supercomputers, just the funnest thing ever, as they say. And I started to slowly realize that if I could, you know, impart some of my knowledge or some of my skill to others, either within the group or maybe in front of a customer, you know, imagine that, that this would be an interesting way to actually learn more. You know, it's the virtuous feedback cycle, right? If you spend time in front of a customer or in front of a sales partner or in front of, you know, your own, you know, fellow employees, your fellow programmers, you just might learn something. And it slowly dawned on me that, you know, not only is this valuable for others and myself as well, but it's actually kind of fun. So I started getting involved in some leadership training, and fortunately, the company I was at actually offered that kind of training, so I took a few courses. They were, I'll be fair, okay. Some of the things I knew, some of the things I didn't know, and then there were some techniques that were interesting. You know, some were behavioral techniques about how leaders behave and what they say or what they don't say in certain situations, but others was really how you relate. You know, I'm an engineer. How do you relate to other engineers? How do you deal with folks that are not engineers that might be business people or managers or somebody that doesn't know a darn thing about what you're coding and why you're doing it?
I would pay $1 million to sit in on that class retroactively.
Yeah. And I'm curious, do you see yourself as an introvert or an extrovert if you had to fall into one category?
Boy, if I had to pick one, I think I have learned over the years that being an extrovert is actually more fun. Not that there isn't, you know, value in being introverted when the time is right. I actually grew up that way, you know, kind of the classic geek, if you like. I mean, this is the Geek Whispers, after all.
No shame.
That's right. It's Geek Craig. Knew I was going to be an engineer. My dad was an engineer. mechanical. I thought I was going to be a mechanical, and then I discovered the light of computer science. So I started doing that and never looked back. So, you know, to me, actually getting or imparting that skill to others, I would say if I had to pick one, I'd be an extrovert. Because I learned over the years that it's actually beneficial on both sides. And that's what really leadership to me was all about. And I kind of learned it that way. I had a couple of really great, you know, folks that on the paper, they were called managers, but you could, and I'm sure you guys can recognize this too. Immediately you recognize them as more than just a manager, you know, more than just a hard line up on an org chart, that they were actually leaders. They cared about you career wise. They cared about you outside of your career. You know, you can sometimes tell in an interview, and I interview lots of people in my position and talk to lots of different companies, and how you start out the interview or the first question, for example, might not be related to, you know, the specific task at work. And this is part of getting to know people. So I am kind of this classic left brain, right brain person, as it turns out. And unlike some of my fellow nerds who have math skills that are just off the charts. And I was very good at math, but not off the charts good. I was very good at English and the so-called liberal arts, but not off the charts good. But I had the right blend, as it turns out. So if I'd lean one way, long answer to a short question, I'd lean toward extrovert. And besides, it's more fun.
I love the answer because, number one, I like the idea that you see it as choice, that you recognize both sides of yourself and created a positive feedback loop to pushing yourself. So that really, I think, speaks to your character and what you wanted to accomplish in life and taking chances. And I also really love your definition of a leader. I love the distinction you make between someone who's a manager who sees a single task and someone who's a leader who thinks in that holistic way. That was just, those are great words. Very inspiring.
Well, thank you. It's proven to be, you know, not just from me, but listening to other leaders, and maybe they might be, you know, leaders within my company or within the industry. You know, I have many, many contacts and worked a long time in the quote unquote storage industry, listening to various people from various different backgrounds and learning from them. You know, not everybody thinks the same in the storage industry. Imagine that.
Quick question going back to when you first did raise your hand. Sure. Or when you first were tapped to take some of these classes and do some of these leadership things and figured that, oh, maybe you could even be in front of customers. I guess the question is, did you in fact raise your hand or were you tapped on the shoulder? And were they letting engineers in front of customers in those days?
Well, great question. And the answer was back then, yes, but only in very specific circumstances. So, for example, one of the very first ones I did was actually an install. I was working at Control Data, and we did a very large supercomputer install. It was at a site in California, so they flew us out, and we sat in front of the customer, and they hadn't bought the machine yet, right? We were going to put it in and install it, and if it ran a certain code at a certain time or you know, quicker, then they would buy the machine. And that was really my first glimpse of, you know, what customers actually go through that implement this technology that we spend so many hours writing code for and designing circuit boards and things like that. So that was a bit of an eye opener and a good way, because I learned a lot from this customer, you know, what they really cared about, not just about, you know, running their code in a certain amount of time, but what they really cared about in the relationship with you as a, you know, a valued technology expert. They look to you to provide this level of expertise, to provide this level of you know, assurance and, you know, that the job is going to be executed not only correctly, but even more than correctly, right? The old cliche is, you know, you don't just meet expectations, you exceed them, right? So we did that, and that was an eye opener. So for about 3 or 4 more years, I kind of hunkered down and did my job. And I was, you know, just getting married at that point and beginning a family as well. And then a couple of years later, I actually did raise my hand, but I had one leader who turned out to be a mentor in disguise that actually said, you know what, Rob, you might do well to take this. It will expand your career. It will introduce you to things that you might ordinarily not see in your, you know, role as, you know, doing coding work. So I did. Kind of took the chance. And, you know, lo and behold, there were about a dozen other people in the class, some I knew, some I didn't. So I became, you know, friends and had good relationships with them. And it was the snowball effect after that. I wanted to learn more. The more I got into it, the more I wanted to learn.
So sort of a two-part question of you mentioned mentoring. I would love to hear your thoughts about it. I've seen all sorts of things. You know, yes, people should get mentors. I'm personally a really big fan of it. People wondering how to go about it. Is it formal? Is it informal? Do you use the word or do you just go out and learn? And if you do think that mentorship or having someone who kind of sits in a role that you want to go into is important for leadership. So mentoring, give us your thoughts around that and sort of how it relates and how it has related to leadership for you.
That's a great question, Amy. And I'll break it up into two parts. I think mentoring is very important. You know, having gone through the experience, and again, the person that mentored me really didn't introduce himself or, you know, explicitly say that, hey, Rob, this is what I'm going to do for you. It was much more of a dialogue. It was much more of a relationship. But over time, I learned that indeed this person was actually mentoring me. So I practiced that on both sides. I still have a mentor in the industry that I look up to and I communicate with. It's an informal basis from time to time. But we know that we're in this kind of relationship. And then I have a couple of people actually that one worked for me, one worked with me at EMC that I have an explicit mentoring relationship with. We have periodic calls. I kind of keep tabs on them, you know, what they're doing in their career, offering advice, things like that. So it's a bit more formalized, still super valuable, though. And again, I get as much out of it as the person being mentored. It's a wonderful thing. I encourage it. It's not for everybody. I'll tell you that. It's much more like a coaching relationship, in some senses and in the good sense of the word coaching. Right. There are some, you know, sports coaches and other, you know, professional coaches that will steer you in paths that you don't want to go. But this kind of coaching is much more for personal development, you know, improving your own ability to act as a leader. And this is the two people I formerly mentor. This is what I want to be able to help them to do.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I've had advice given to me and I've given advice. I'm not sure. I've ever had a formal mentor or even somebody that de facto mentor. I don't know, Amy, you've actually sought out mentors in your career path, I think.
I'm a big fan and I've used the, you know, asking people, talking about it very directly, sort of formalizing the relationship. I've done the you know, the ninja method of quietly and thoroughly learning from someone whether they realized it or not. And sometimes both in the what to do and what not to do. But that's a conversation for another
That's like
day,
the right? Reverse ninja mentor. That's interesting. Yeah.
The ironic mentor.
The ironic mentor. I think we all need t-shirts.
That's right. The unintentional mentor.
I think it can work both ways. Meaning I get this question a good bit of people say, do I have to make it formal? And it depends on, I think, the person you're working with. So I think formal can be good if a person really likes that kind of rule and structure. It can be good on both sides. And I think informal can also be really great. Anyway, long story to short question here, too, of one of my favorite things a mentor of mine taught me was any deal can be made if both sides agree. And I love the simplicity and complexity of that sentence. So I think mentoring is the same way. Like if the two people in the relationship both benefit from it, whether you do it formally or informally, it's absolutely a great thing.
What a good call. I'm going to be one that raises my hand for formal for the one reason of saying that every time I've asked someone to be a mentor for me, saying it out loud both made me uncomfortable and also solidified that that's exactly what I was looking for. There's something about vocalizing mm-hmm. the need and the want that mm-hmm. is really good for me personally. And I'm sure it's nice to hear as well. It's validating. Like I generally say something along the lines of, I really respect what you've done with your career and I'd love to have some time with you on a regular basis. Would you be willing to mentor me? I haven't been turned down once. And if anything, I've usually made people's day with it. So I would err on the side of saying it out loud. Basically, in all cases, it's really healthy to solidify that that is exactly what you're looking for, and it's okay to ask.
Yeah, and I would absolutely echo that. And the two people that I'm doing that now with, both of them, you know, to your point, asked that very question. One was about ready to leave the company, and he has, as it turns out. And then the other one is still with the company, and I left, right? I left EMC, but he asked me to do that before I even left. So I absolutely agree with you. If you can vocalize it and if you can express it, it actually imparts a wonderful initial relationship, you know, with the person you're asking to be a mentor. It's really meaningful to do it that way.
You're at Micron now, a big company. You were at EMC, even yes. bigger company. Were these right. part of formal mentorship programs, or were these informal relationships?
Very much the latter, John. Very informal. One of mine was a direct report of mine. He was on my CTO staff. The other was not. He was in a completely different part of the company. But I knew him and had worked with him and then continued to mentor him to this day. So, yeah, really super large. EMC 60,000 plus, right? Micron 30,000 plus. And both companies have actually curricula for leadership. I haven't seen one on mentoring per se, because it's much more of a personal thing. Leadership can be applied in lots of different areas. And, you know, obviously companies want to develop leaders. Mentors, on the other hand, I haven't seen anything formal from that. Not that there isn't out there, but I just started these relationships, or was asked in those two cases to do that informally, just because of the relationship I had with the person.
To tease Brender, he likes to call mentoring out formally so that he can measure it later. Rob, with all your geek cred, I feel like we should I should ask you that question of how does one measure mentorship, because we can give Matt some more fuel for the fire.
Honestly, I'm going to live by the words that are being said here and say, yeah, I do measure, but it's not a measurement of the relationship. I think that's actually pretty screwed up when you start putting, like, are you getting a 95% good or 60? I feel like your mentorship skills are about a 60 today. No, like, God, that's horrible. No, but what can be measured is yourself. Are you making goals for yourself, and then based on feedback and iterations with your mentor, are you improving by some definition of improvement, which is relative to what your goals are? And sometimes they're quantifiable. So yeah, Amy, make fun all you want. I can fight my way out of this paper bag.
My mentors encouraged me to lean in. I'm just kidding.
That's actually a fascinating question. One of the ways I actually measure, you know, as a mentor, is I want to see how these folks, you know, develop and mature their interaction with their peers in the industry, and then also with customers. Again, I think, you know, call me crazy if you like, but customers are where it's at. If you have a technical career, writing code is wonderful, developing product is wonderful, you know, designing circuits is wonderful. But putting that out in front of the customer, explaining what it does, you know, in English so the customer can understand it, and then getting the customer to develop trust with you, that's really what turned me over from, you know, the individual contributor side to the management side. And I've bounced back and forth over time, manage people, manage projects, you know, not manage people. At EMC, I started out as an individual contributor, you know, CTO of the Americas, and then I grew to a staff of six, so I did a little of both. But really interesting to see the people develop and mature in their business and professional relationships, and then also their interpersonal skills. That's part of it, I think.
I love that answer, and what a great measure of the success of both of it. And since we can mentor at scale via the podcast, what would you say to someone who was kind of an engineer's engineer, maybe, and that, like you said, traditional, stereotypical way, and really had the technical chops, but was looking for ways to enhance the softer skills, the engagement with customers, mm-hmm. potentially even leadership or communication? What are some of the things, the activities, the ways to practice you encourage them?
So there's really two ways. And again, nothing is perfect here, but I've found them to be very effective. Number one, I will take them out on a sales call. Sounds like the scariest thing in the world to some folks, but, you know, have them participate, but mostly listening. And it turns out that listening is actually a really fine art. What's the old cliche, but true, you have 2 ears, one mouth, use in proportion. So having them just literally sit in a meeting and listen to customers, big, you know, kind of eye-opening experience for a lot of engineers. And I try to coach them, if you like, to resist the temptation to just jump up in the whiteboard and, you know, get to the solution before the problems are even discussed. So having them listen, take them out in the field, you know, get them on an airplane, have them go on a sales call or three, and then come back and then, you know, have a discussion. Hey, what did that feel like, right? What did you learn from the customer? How do you think you can apply that to the next, you know, project you're going to code or design? That's really effective. And then the other way is to, you know, not take the lead role and bring them along so they can listen, but put them into that leadership role. And after a few meetings, again, out with customers, you have to get folks to go out and you know, converse with other people at any level. It doesn't matter if it's a one-on-one meeting with a customer or if it's in front of a group, you find the comfort level of that person. And then having them lead that meeting after having gone to a few. Again, it's not perfect, but I found it a wonderful way to get a, you know, it had this, you can see the person blossom when they do that and their skills, and they come back and they can write code that's twice as good as before because now they understand what the customer really wants.
Yeah, it must be so refreshing. Do you mentor others right now? And if so, are they, do you ever mentor people that are, you know, higher on the food chain in your company or externally?
In one case, I did, as it turns out, and that was actually back at Xiaotech. It was really fun. It was challenging to some extent, but one thing that helped was it was in a more of a small company environment, so it wasn't, you know, 60,000 people. Can be rather intimidating to do that, but it's also, you look at the culture within a company. I know you guys have had podcasts around that. So I did at one point. Today, I mentor, I would call a peer of mine or somebody that I actually, again, he was a direct report for me. Now he's a VP at a different company in that role. So he's learning that executive role, and I'm helping him in his career doing that. The other is not. So he's, you know, if you did the classic org chart thing, he's probably three or four levels below. But it doesn't matter because I can relate to this person on a technical level. He's very interested in what I do. I'm very interested in what he does and what he knows. So I think it can work at lots of different levels. I think you can mentor up. Again, it's a slightly different approach to do that. But if you can pull it off, and you might mentor that person in an area where they think they need a mentor, and maybe it's related to their exact job function, maybe it's not. But I've done it both ways, so a lot of fun.
Hey, Rob, you are a technical leader and part of technical management and executive management.
Right.
I had a friend once who, in a non-technical role, who was told, you can become an executive, and it was kind of like a kung fu sort of moment, not when you snatch the pebble from my hand, but when you're when you can get the stick shoved up your ass. And I'm sorry about the language, but that was literally what was said to him. Like, you can become an executive when you become, you know, when you get a stick shoved up your ass. What do you think? I'm curious what you think of that advice. And to be an executive, do you have to become an inhuman monster?
Boy, I hope not. Otherwise, I flunked that test right away.
Yeah, that was kind of a leading question, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. But no,
with a stick. With a stick, led with
no
a stick.
Less. And certain body parts, no less. But no, I hope not. And I appreciate the question because I've seen them. You know, all three of you guys have seen them. I've seen that kind of executive. It just drives me bananas to see that kind of behavior. And, you know, and fortunately, I haven't worked a lot with them. There are one or two along my career that I could point out like that. And you alternate from just trying to totally ignore them to, you know, taking them out behind the proverbial woodshed and beating them with the stick, I suppose. It's a very difficult thing to deal with, and trying to avoid being that kind of executive, you know, projecting your organizational power, you know, over a person, that doesn't wash. It totally does not wash. And to the point where, you know, if I'm interacting with an engineering group, people that are running code, I try to relate with them at that level, having done that job, having known what it's like, and do that. And you know, the executive role to me is a lot of fun. I get to help build the business. It's an important thing. You know, it's fulfilling for me to do that. But as a technical person, it's also equally fulfilling to see, you know, younger people than I am. Again, you know, quoting age, I'm 3A in hex. Sounds so much better than the real thing, which is 58. But I want to see, you know, relate to them as they're doing their job and again, try to be an effective leader for them, even though, yeah, I might be 5 or 6 levels on the food chain above them. Really just doesn't matter. So,
well, I want to sort of follow on with that from the flip side. I love the question, actually, funny as it was framed. But and Rob, in a world of so much snark and so much negative energy, for lack of a better term, and I, listeners, I have the pleasure of knowing Rob a little bit in the real world, and you are truly one of the nicest people. And it's not just me saying that, like I hear other people, that is absolutely your reputation out in the world of you just have this wonderful, positive, upbeat thing going on. And so often we think about leaders as having to be so tough, so fierce, kind of removed. What's the secret there for you in terms of keeping that positive attitude? Because you obviously have had an effective leadership career. You've been with several companies. You have a serious and solid track record. What's the secret?
What's the secret? Well, I'll tell you what. It's a learned thing. Again, for me, it is. It took me a while to get there. But I slowly figured out, and this is about 20 years ago, so I'm in mid-career now. Right now I'm at, you know, toward the end of my career. But in mid-career, I figured out, you know, I can be as snarky as the next person and critical as the next person. But that there's a limit to doing that in terms of your effectiveness. And if you value this, which I do, you know, when I come to a company, I want to be able to make a difference for the company. And being snarky and being critical and all that, yeah, it's kind of fun sometimes, but it's not productive. It doesn't help anyone, as it turns out. It might be good for a laugh, but you know what? There's a lot of other ways to get laughs that are far better than that. So I try to put the snark behind. And literally be nice to people. It sounds, you know, very simplistic, very altruistic, but it's true. Making relationships. And this is a wonderful way to be able to positively affect your own company, but also your own career. You know, it is very rare these days where you stay in the same company your entire career. I've made 4 career moves in now my 38th year in the business. Not very many, you know, there's a lot of folks that go a year or two, but being nice to people, treating them with respect, you know, trying to lead them instead of managing them, that has paid off. And again, the light bulb went on probably 20 years ago where I literally had a choice. I was working at a company and I didn't enjoy it, and I could go into the dark and the snark. And I correctly figured out, fortunately, that wasn't the right way to treat people. I wouldn't want to be treated that way. So I try to treat people the best they can and become their friends. And that turns out to be a big win.
And Rob, I think you just gave us the episode title of Don't Go to the Snark Side.
Well, very clever. There
boy,
you go.
It's so easy to do to be snarky because it's always
it is.
Inside a company. It always looks a little messier than it does from the outside. I'll tell my Rob story real quick because it relates. It was at EMC World a few years ago and it was a community event. You know the way that these big conferences work, right? If you're an executive or if you meeting with customers, there are some really nice receptions, right? You know, there's like good wine and enormous shrimp. You know, you can find me by the shrimp table. But this was a community event, and I think it was maybe pre-EMC elect, I forget. But it was kind of sweaty, and, you know, the beer was bad, and the food was terrible. And there was a bunch of sweaty dudes there. Mostly dudes. And there was Rob Peglar, right? And he said, hi. I think that may have been the time we met. And we actually, I think we had a good conversation, but I just remember Rob, that you hanging out with the community crowd when I know that you could have been at some executive event. It made an impact or an impression on me then. And I just wanted to, I'll thank you now. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. I do remember that. And you're exactly correct. It was pre-EMC World. And it was, a room full of nerds and geeks and wonderful people. And I just enjoyed the heck out of it. It was a very nice time. And yeah, I could have been having the canapes and the champagne with my fellow CTOs and VPs and all that. And that would have been fine too. But, there is value in community and it doesn't matter what your title is. And I've learned that to be true. There is great value in community. That's why I really, I was just delighted to, when Amy invited me to come on, it was like, yes, this is wonderful. Number one, lots of geek cred. So that gets the propeller turning. But number two, you know, you are doing a service to the community. You really are. You know, you may not realize it sometimes, but it's very true. Using the technique of a podcast to do that, I could go on and on about that. But no. Community is where it's at. 20 years ago, it was a hard thing to do. But now it is much easier. And you know what? It's really effective.
Wow. Really quite a lot to say there, but I'm going to ignore all the gushy stuff and say, I love that you keep making a reference to a propeller on the head, which I know only from looking at examples of nerds from before I was a child. Which we've been talking about the generational thing. I'm like, oh, that's like a reference to a stereotype that is before my time. I don't mean to play that.
No, that's quite all right. Again, badge of honor. I could break out the pocket protector and the slide rule for you if you like too.
I love it.
That's usually when we call you baby Brender though, Matt. So you're setting yourself up.
That's fine. Cause I mean, there has been an age angle to this conversation, and that's why I wanted to zoom in on it, especially when we talk about the future.
Absolutely.
So as you think about attracting talent, especially, you know, people that are very much in vogue and sought after for big companies, what do you see as some of your strategies in the way that you interact with new employees at the company?
That's a great question. Very important as well. I mean, we're, you know, at Micron, no secret, we're growing, we're hiring people, and we're getting into areas where, you know, kind of the traditional Micron hasn't. But it could be, you know, innumerable list of other companies too, not just Micron. So, you know, when I interview folks that are, you know, just coming out of college, or maybe they've done one job in their career and now they're looking for job number two, it's a different world for them. But number one, you know, even though I'm, you know, long time in the industry, I treat them with respect. Number two, I interview people with a specific goal in mind, and look at them saying, could this person develop into a leader in the future? Yeah, you can measure coding skills and design skills all day long. That's all great. And you want to hire the best people you can. But what I look for is, you know, and I told my staff this innumerable times, there's really only two roles as an executive, at least for me. Number one, hire the best people you can, you know, equip them the best way possible. And then number two, get the hell out of the way and let them do their job. It's a really effective technique. So you look for people, at least I do, that are self-propelled, right? That they know what the right thing to do is. You don't have to look over their shoulder and look at their code and say, oh, that wasn't the right thing to do. You know, you should have done it this way. That doesn't wash very often. So the people coming out of college, the younger generation, if you like, that's what I look for in them. And if you'll find somebody like that, it's just wonderful. It's just wonderful. You can develop their careers. It's great.
What are you most excited about in talking to these people that are going to be the future of IT? What are they bringing you that you're excited about?
I'm excited about a lot of things because, yes, I wrote code for a long time, still do, not for money anymore, mind you. Write the code in the home lab. It's a lot of fun. And blog about it every now and then. But the whole idea for me is I want to learn from them, right? They've had different experience than I've had, not in terms of length of career, but in terms of what they've done. Maybe they know a language that I don't. I could pick something up. Maybe they've seen an interesting technique in a class that, you know, I took 30 years ago, and they learned something new. So that's the excitement for me. I want to continue to learn from these folks that maybe know something that I don't. And that's cool. I can, you know, put that in my bag of tricks and you know, learn from that. And then can help continue to develop that person. It's great. I mean, I learn as much from them as they do from me.
It sort of ties back to our previous conversation about mentoring. I think that's one of the things that people who maybe haven't tried it or feel like, oh, it's so much time or what do I have to offer? I would appeal to their self-interest a little bit of, especially if there is an age gap or if there's an opportunity to help somebody coming up that...
Right.
It's an amazing opportunity to learn. I'm really finding that I have the opportunity to work with some. I sound like an old fogey too. Some younger people these days, with the kids these days, and it's amazing how instructive it is.
It is, no question about it. And each generation, again, you know, I'm in my 38th year, and I'd say kind of three waves of folks coming through, and you know, mine, and then 10 or 15 years ago, there was another wave of people, and then today, right? And again, the kind of the college grads of today and what they've learned. And it's just fascinating, you know, the diversity of things they know. It's wonderful. And then if you can, you know, kind of gently steer them and help them and coach them along, that's the best reward of all.
Hey, Rob, sometimes the talk around IT and technology or mm-hmm. enterprise technology, work technology gets a little scary. Do you still feel like IT and infrastructure is a good career field to get into if you're just coming out of college?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a very emphatic yes. And here's why. You know, we are at the point now in 2015, and this may sound like, you know, a bit of hyperbolic conversation, if you like, but there is a big inflection point going on in terms of infrastructure and technology. You know, and it's not just processing anymore, but the networking and the diversity of networking going on, different, you know, SDNs all over the place now, different ways to approach a given problem. And then the diversity of storage, which is my field and has been for a long time, is just absolutely fascinating now. And the old cliche is, right, there's no new ideas at IT, there's only old ones recirculated, right? You know, we're now going back to much more heavy compute networking storage inside a server than ever before. Some people call it hyperconverged, call it what you like. It's absolutely fascinating how to make these things run efficiently and the potential to employ very high-speed, you know, bandwidth networks, very high-speed storage, very cold and efficient storage on the other end of the spectrum. Whereas 20 years ago, I have to tell you, our choices were not that large, you know, spanning from fast to slow or big to small. They just weren't. And now there's this utterly fascinating diversity of, you know, computing devices you can literally hold in your hand or let, you know, almost not even see right now, to these, you know, monstrous 500,000 million core supercomputers that are out there. So if anything, infrastructure is even more interesting than it used to be. How's that?
Huh. I like it as somebody who's still fascinated by it and continues to be, especially as things grow. Hey, one question for those people that might be interested in getting your attention. What's the one thing that a junior or mid-level person could put on their resume that would catch your attention if they're looking for a developer-type role? What makes you stand out these days?
If they're looking for a developer-type role?
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, I might be a little biased here because this is what I like to see in developers.
That's why you're here.
No, okay. There you go. I would love to see somebody, and if I see this on their resume, and I'll kind of paraphrase it, not being afraid to go talk to real customers to solve real problems for real money, by the way, you know, not just free, and actually learn in the process. That just turns my boat like nothing else. If I see a developer willing to do that, willing to go engage the people that are going to use his or her code for money, this is a really, really interesting thing. And developers that want to do that, they're rare. But if you see that on a resume, or talk to the person and they're willing to go out and do that in the field, or trade positions with a customer support person for a while, that's a really interesting role for a developer to go into. It's like, yeah, I actually have to fix and understand my own code. Holy cow. Yeah. So that's what I look for.
The
willingness to engage. Right.
Well, I have to ask my favorite and somewhat infamous final question, which is hard considering your extreme positive outlook and attitude. But if you had one thing to share with a mentee to spare them from some mistake you've made and encourage them to make a new one, what would be the one thing you tell someone to never, ever, ever do again?
Oh, to never, ever. Oh, to never, ever, ever do again. That's really interesting. I'll tell you what, I had this done to me before, you know, as a programmer, something I just, when it happened, I said, I never want to do that as a person. And it really boils down to a complete lack of trust and lack of respect, you know, going the other way. That to me, if you actually demonstrate that on a consistent basis, you know, with your group, with your peers, with your leaders, that sort of thing, It's cliche, but true. You know, you can disagree with somebody. You can state your opinion. You can state the facts behind it as you see them. That's all great. Healthy debate is fine. But this kind of classic just politics for politics' sake, you know, snark for snark's sake, doesn't wash. I've had it done to me. I'm sure you guys have too. I don't want to ever see that in somebody that I mentor because I know it's not productive. It just doesn't work. You may think that you get some short-term gain or, you know, hey, look at me. I just criticize this person. Doesn't that make me cool? Well, answer is no, because step back, get some perspective, look in a wider circle. And then there's 100 people looking at you like, what the hell did you just do? So that's the thing to me. You know, you can disagree with somebody all you like, but continue to have respect for them, especially if you are a coworker. Right. And then this translates also into the world of FUD. I don't like people, vendor versus vendor, you know, protocol versus protocol, just for that sake. That, to me, that's non-productive work. So I don't want to see that happening. Hopefully that's a good answer for you.
That's a great answer. That is, speaks to your character and why we're all, gushing and not saying, not holding back the good things. Too often we hear all the snark and all the negative stuff. So it's such a pleasure to have someone on who is a well-respected leader and who you always hear the best of positive rumors about. So,
well, thank you. So appreciate being on.
Well, Rob, where if people want to follow up or see what you're up to, what's the best place to look you up online?
Well, I'll tell you what. Twitter is a very fun thing. At PeglarR, that's two R's on the end, so PEGLARR. I'm on there. I'm also on LinkedIn quite a bit. I blog on the Micron site under storage, which is the business unit I'm in and I'm helping to lead. You can see me there. But Twitter and LinkedIn are probably the best way to communicate via the social media.
Well, thanks again. Like I said, it's a treat to have you on and to spread that mentorship far and wide. So thanks for your time.
Oh, anytime. It's been a delight to chat with you guys. Again, you do a wonderful service to the community. Even though you may not realize it, it's absolutely true because the diversity of topics you guys touch, it's just great. It is the definition of community.
Wow. Thank you. And if you agree with Rob, I will now do my shameless plug. Then head out there, share the podcast with a friend, give us a few likes or stars or thumbs up or whatever the frame within which you're listening to it permits you to do. So thanks again for listening. And until next time, we have been the Geek Whisperers.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.